We got an appointed writing from the fathers this morning from Dr. Luther. From a semi-famous thing he did called the Heidelberg Disputation. Now that sounds almost as painful as catechesis, doesn't it? Heidelberg was just a city where this debate took place, this disputation. It was sort of a show, a bit of an argument that was for show. It was to pit two different theologians against each other, and it was kind of entertainment in a medieval way. And it's pretty intense stuff, but I have to say that in all the things that Luther has written that have influenced me as a Christian, it is his Large Catechism, which again is not painful, it's quite refreshing, and this work, the Heidelberg Disputation. Now we're jumping into the very end. It is a challenging work, and so just be aware of that. Well, what is he going to mean? Well, I'll try to unpack that for you as we go, but it is just so poignant. It's so deep what he's delivering to us about the struggle of wisdom against folly in our lives, in our souls, as we try to understand the difference, recognizing that, you know, within us we carry around this old man who is on the wrong side, right, and is always trying to deceive from within. So it's Thesis 21. I believe there's 24, maybe 25. But this is kind of the closing segment of theses. Thesis means statement of truth, right? It's kind of, you remember this from like, what was it, probably seventh grade when like the teacher wrote thesis statement on the board and like banged it with chalk and just said, thesis statement, you need that. You're like, I don't know what that means. It just means what's your main idea, right? What's the thing you're going to say? You got to say that and then you defend it with your argument, all that. Well, that was the way that they wrote back in the medieval times. They actually just every paragraph had a thesis statement. Huh? That's what this is. And they're kind of useful, actually, because they summarize everything that they want to say. So anyway, here's what he says. He says, a theology of glory calls evil good and good evil. A theology of the cross calls the thing what it actually is. Now, that may not seem like the most revelatory thing you ever heard, because there's some pretty power-packed terms in there, but let's just back off a second and say, first off, he's getting this from the book of Isaiah, where Isaiah talks about what evil does is it inverts everything so that the devil's way of looking at things is to think, like not to say, but to think that good is actually evil and to believe that evil is actually good. So that even if the devil were to try to be good, he could only do it in an evil way because that's what he would think it would be, right? It's like paradoxical in a sense, but it like makes a ton of sense too. And then we have the same problem. And Luther labels this problem of trying to be good in evil ways. He labels this a theology of glory. Now, don't get like thrown off by that. I was when I first learned that. I'm like, but isn't glory a good thing? Isn't God full of glory and all that? Well, yes, that's not what he's talking about. What he means by a theology of glory is a theology or a belief about God that is centered in my glory, right? That my relationship to God is related to how good I am and how much I can climb up and prove myself to God. A person who believes in God in that way, that my relationship to God is based on my glory, will inevitably then call evil good and good evil. Whereas a person with the theology of the cross, that is a person whose knowledge of God comes not through how good you are, but through the death and resurrection of Jesus, has a different result, which is to call the thing what it actually is. That is to call evil evil and to call good good. To be unashamed of that and to even be bold in that sense in a world screaming lies at you, insisting that the sky is purple, you can actually just say, no, it's blue. Now, I'm not meaning actually talking about the color of the sky, right? I'm talking about good and evil. I'm talking about Ten Commandments kind of stuff. I'm talking about how we're saved kind of stuff. When the world is telling us it can't be, we are free to say, God has surely said. And it's the cross which sets us free to do that. Now, there's more in the writing here, right? But I'm dwelling on this because it's just so huge. A theology of glory calls evil good and good evil. A theology of the cross calls the thing what it is. That is, a person who believes the relationship we have with God is about how good I can get, inevitably gets evil. But a person who believes our relationship with God is founded in the cross of Jesus inevitably knows truth. Now, Luther says more. He says, this is clear. He who does not know Christ does not know God hidden in suffering. Therefore, he prefers works to suffering. Glory to the cross, strength to weakness, wisdom to folly, and in general, good to evil. These are the people whom the apostles call the enemies of the cross of Christ, for they hate the cross and suffering and love works and the glory of works. Thus they call the good of the cross evil and the evil of a deed good. Now, what might throw you off there is that he said they prefer wisdom to folly, but he's not talking about the wisdom and folly we were just talking about with Proverbs. He's talking about the wisdom of the world versus the foolishness of the cross, as Paul says, right? He's talking about the strength of man versus the weakness of kneeling at the altar and receiving bread and wine and believing that that is the end all of all eternity. He's talking about preferring good to evil as in preferring the appearance of good to the suffering and endurance of turning the other cheek, right? So once you have chosen this life, this life's glory, over Christ saying, pick up your cross and follow me, that is, be crucified in this life, find suffering, and know that I've got the answer no matter what you see, then you become an enemy of the cross of Christ, like literally, because you don't want the cross, you want you. Thus they call the good of the cross evil and the evil of a deed good, he says. That is, I mean, think about it. Why don't you like looking at a crucifix? Right? Oh, it's ugly. He's not there anymore. He's already risen. Well, yeah, but why don't you like looking at it? Well, because we can't stand it. We think there's something wrong there. Yeah, what's wrong there is us. And we don't want to call that thing what it is, right? So we would rather call my own spiritual growth the good thing. Yeah, try to get past the cross, get around the cross, forget that he is kind of there eternally for us, that he still carries the wounds even as a risen man. So Luther tells us God can be found only in suffering and the cross, as has already been said. Therefore, the friends of the cross say that the cross is good and works are evil. For through the cross, works are destroyed, and the old Adam, who is especially edified by works, is crucified. Now, he's not saying don't do good works. He's saying don't trust them, right? And that trust in your good works is the highest evil. It's what your old sinful flesh really wants, is to point at itself and say, look at me. See how I am proving myself? See how good I really am without God? Right? Oh, yeah, God helped me, but I did the work. Yeah, that's the angle he's always working. And as a result, Luther says, it is impossible for a person not to be puffed up by his good works unless he has first been deflated and destroyed by suffering and evil until he knows that he is worthless, that his works are not his, but God's. It's tough stuff, right? I mean, it kind of strikes at the core of how we like to think about ourselves, who we wish we were, which is actually what the fall's all about, right? What did Adam do? He wished he was somebody else. And God's like, you're awesome, dude. I made you. Adam's like, yeah, but couldn't I be better on my own? Now, it wasn't like Adam just came up with this. The devil tempted him with this and all that. But seeing that wicked root still in ourselves is so key to then the freedom that comes with no longer having to play that game. Now you're going to be tempted to play that game, but the gospel, the beauty of word and sacrament spirituality is that you're free to kind of like call it what it is. Like, oh man, that's the ladder game. That's the glory game. I don't have to play that game with my spirituality. I can trust Jesus instead. How wonderful. And you go and you kneel and you, again, confess your sin. You get absolved by your pastor. You hear him preach from the text, remind you about Jesus, which the world certainly isn't going to do. And then have that supper bind you to Christ, bind you to the cross, right? Give you the actual glory of God, which is not man's glory, but the glory of the only begotten Son who suffered in your place and now who bids you come and follow me.